Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. As always, my name is Marvin Yeh.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And for this episode, we'll be bringing you a special interview with Fonda Lee, the author of the recently released Jade City, as well as EXO and Zero Boxer. As frequent listeners might know, Jade City was a book that I just completely devoured, much to Rira's surprise.
It's like a really long book.
We talked to Fonda about her background as an author, about Jade City and her inspirations, and about the state of fantasy in modern literature. But before we get to that, really quickly, don't forget our book club pick for this month, January 2018, is Pachinko by Minjin Lee. Hopefully you guys are all working your way through that.
And if you've already finished with Pachinko, then you can start on our February book club pick, Everyone is an Alien When You're an Alien by Jomny Sun. Did I get that correct? I'm pretty sure I didn't.
Also, if you're done with Pachinko, please send us your thoughts on our Goodreads forum. We do love to hear what you think about our book club pick, and we'll even talk about it during our discussion. Again, you can join our Goodreads group by going to goodreads.com and searching Books and Boba. And don't forget to introduce yourself. And on that note, here is our interview with Fonda. And we are here with Fonda Lee, the author of Jade City, EXO, and Zero Boxer. I've only really read Jade City. It was one of my favorite books of last year, but we're so excited to have you on the call with us. You're here calling us all the way from Portland.
Yes, thanks for having me.
We scheduled this interview via Skype when Rira outed me as someone who binged through your book in like a day or two. But
I'm impressed. It's a fat book.
Yeah, it's like over 500 pages. I was so impressed by it.
It's one of those things where, you know how when you're young and irresponsible, sometimes you might, you know, overdo like watching like a series or play a video game. That happened with me with this book. I started reading it and then the sun came up. So, and then I ruined my entire workday the day after.
Excellent. That is what I love to hear. I feel like the fairy godmother of sleep deprivation. Really, really happy.
Yeah, but thanks for writing such an awesome book. And I was especially excited after reading your Medium article talking about the state of fantasy and in fiction. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk to you more about that later. But I'm sure our listeners would like to know like your background, how you got started writing, and what led you to write books like Jade City and science fiction and fantasy.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I was a big science fiction and fantasy fan ever since I was probably like 8 years old or so. I was reading a lot of fantasy novels like the Prydain Chronicles and the Narnia Chronicles. And then when I got older, I got into Anne McCaffrey and Isaac Asimov and like all the kind of classic science fiction fantasy authors. And I wanted to be a writer since I was really young. I think I was probably about 10 years old and I told my parents I wanted to be an author.
Wow.
But as it happens, they were not totally down with that idea and thought I should get a career that actually could support me. So I went up and did the classically good Asian American thing of getting a practical career. And I went to business school and I spent over a decade in corporate finance and strategy. I worked for a lot of Fortune 500 companies as a management consultant and eventually ended up working here in Portland at Nike in corporate strategy. So I had this business career going and, you know, in the meantime, I got married, had kids and always kind of wrote as a hobby. It was just always this passion of mine. And at some point, I just fell off the writing bandwagon. Life got super busy. I had a full-time job and a family and I wasn't writing anymore. I think it was when I wasn't writing anymore that I realized how much I missed it and how important it was to me. And I was kind of reaching this stage in my career that I sort of had this choice. Did I want to kind of level up and go into, you know, ever deeper into the world of general management and corporate finance? Or did I want to do something different with my life? And I kind of had this creative epiphany that I wanted to write stories. I want to write the sort of stories that I loved when I was a kid and, you know, full of spaceships and magic and so on. And so I did this big career shift, and it took me a few years to do it. But I basically went part-time, and then I kind of quit and contracted myself back as a freelance business consultant so I could work my own hours and take on the projects I wanted to while I was working on writing. And I got more and more serious about writing. I went to workshops. I went to conferences. I started writing every day. I took an online course and just over time realized that I was in it for publication. I wanted to be an author. That was the career I wanted. So so it took me, you know, a little while to kind of come to that realization. And then once I did, it felt really, really right. And I just started writing, writing stories that were science fiction and fantasy, just naturally. That was what I'd always gravitated toward. And my very first manuscript actually was a Asian inspired fantasy about this girl who goes through a portal into a fantasy world and there's dragons. It was all inspired by like Chinese mythology and so on. And that became my first trunked novel that never got published. and then I wrote Zero Boxer, which is a sports in space story. It's about a prize fighter who competes in zero gravity. And that was the book that got me an agent and got me my first book deal. And then my second novel, Exo, came out. That was also a science fiction novel. And then Jade City was a passion project. It was not contracted. It was the first explicitly for the adult audience novel that I wrote. And I actually kept working on it while I was writing Zero Boxer and Exo. And it was this combination of things that I just loved. I like to call it my book of three M's: mafia, magic, and martial arts. You know, there's that saying that you write the book that you can't find, but that you want to read.
Yeah.
That was this book for me. So I've been a martial artist for a very long time and, you know, just big fan of kung fu movies and wuxia. And I also love like crime thriller, gangster films, got The Godfather and Goodfellas, and The Untouchables. And it kind of just blended together into this world, this fantasy world. And then, you know, all the epic fantasy influences. So it was this passion project. And at the time I wrote it, I was thinking, you know, is anyone else going to really like this other than me? So it was one of those things that, no, I didn't know if it would sell, but I loved it. I just kept working on it. And I found fortunately it ended up with a fantastic editor and a fantastic house. And it's just been a great ride since then.
Yeah, that's amazing. It seems like a very common path for a lot of, especially Asian American writers, to have like that first career first and then deciding, no, I really want to do this thing that I always loved. And that's awesome that you're able to not only make that leap, but find success in it. And it's inspiring to a lot of people to know that this type of career is possible if you just, you know, because I think that's the thing. A lot of us as kids, maybe because of parents, maybe because of just culture or just society's, you know, expectations of us, don't feel like this is a possible thing that we could do for a living.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, part of it is that I didn't really feel like there were role models. I mean, I didn't honestly think that author was kind of a job that I could do. In so far as, like, I thought authors were just kind of like, you know, there are people out there, but I didn't know any authors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I certainly didn't know any Asian American authors. I don't think I had a lot of authors come to speak at my school, but certainly, you know, none of them were Asian American. And, you know, I think, you know, there's certainly a prevalence in the Asian American culture of, you know, you want to become a doctor, a lawyer, you know, business, somebody who is a professional. And on one hand, I don't regret the years I spent in corporate America. I had a pretty fulfilling first career, if you will. But gosh, I look back and I think, oh, I wish I'd come to that realization about myself earlier in terms of what I really wanted to do. And it's something that really motivates me now when I go out to speak at schools, if I get invited to talk in classrooms. It really means a lot to me to be able to stand up in front of kids and say, well, this is a real job. This is a viable
this is a real job.
You do this. Like, no, you know, there's not only three jobs in the world. There's a lot of different options. And a creative career can be incredibly fulfilling. It's not easy, but it's a viable option. And, you know, don't close yourself off from it. You know, if you have that dream, pursue it. So it's really important to me.
Yeah.
I heard that Jade City was your first adult fantasy novel. Zero Boxer and Exo were young adult fantasy novels, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they were young adult science fiction novels.
Was the process different by any chance, or was it pretty much similar when it came to world building and characterization?
I would say the process in terms of world building and characterization were pretty similar. My young adult fiction tends to be on the upper age range of the category, so there's certainly crossover. I think most people who enjoy my adult fiction would also enjoy my young adult fiction, and vice versa. So the process was very similar. What was different with Jade City was the sheer scope of the project and the complexity of multiple characters. So what I have with my young adult fiction is one main protagonist, and the world is just as fully developed in the background. But the story really is driven by the experience of this one young protagonist. So it's very centered, and there's an obvious narrative progression, momentum based off of that. With Jade City, I had this cast of characters, and it was really, really focused on this family, and in fact, on a society, but through the lens of this family. So there was a much larger scope in terms of what I wanted to accomplish, and there was a lot more character interplay. So it was, in a sense, it was like taking one of my young adult novels, but then like squaring it and trying to make all these rails run at the same time. And that was this fabulous challenge. And I'm really glad actually that I wrote my previous novels before I tackled this monster, because writing young adult science fiction and both of those novels are pretty fast-paced, action-driven, taught me to write with a great deal of focus. And that was really helpful for me when it came to writing Jade City, because it was the sort of story that could have just sprawled out of control without previous experience.
Also, I don't think you could have added that hot, steamy love scene in your young adult novels.
You'll be surprised, what? Marvin.
Yeah, my young adult fiction, well, EXO in particular, is published by Scholastic. So they sell directly into schools. It's a lot more limit on what I can get away with there.
I have a random question about your book, EXO. Do you get a lot of mentions from K-pop fans? Because EXO is a K-pop band, and I'm figuring that there is some...
This is hilarious. So when I wrote EXO... the title in my mind the whole time was EXO. And when it came time to send it out on submission, my agent and I were like, oh, there's this other book called EXO. And it recently come out. It's another young adult science fiction novel. And we were like, oh, you know, that's such a bummer. I guess we'll have... So we changed the title. We took it out on submission. And then the publisher, when they bought it, said, well, you know, we don't really like the title that you sent it out on submission with. And we're like, yeah, we agree. And we went back and forth on titles for months. And then finally they were like, you know what? I know there's another book out there, but we really like the title EXO. So we're going to go with that. So after, so at that point, the band had not yet blown up and become huge. And, it's funny to me to look back on it because I was all worried about, oh, there's this other book that's called EXO. Is that going to confuse people? And it ended up being a complete non-issue because the only thing people think of now with the title EXO is the K-pop boy band. And I got actually caught up in a fan war because...
Oh, no. Those are intense.
Yeah, so some fans, or not fans, some haters of EXO who were unhappy with the band had a copy of my book, and they threw it down the stairs and like filmed themselves.
What?
Like so because they couldn't, I guess they were mad at the band, so they threw my book down.
They should have just thrown
your
their album.
Your book was a proxy for
and
your...
A whole bunch of other fans got super mad and tagged me in it, and so it is funny actually.
Oh, wow that's rough.
That's
I'm
amazing.
So sorry that you had to go through that.
We apologize on behalf of all K-pop fans.
Yes, I do. I represent all of K-pop fans. No, I don't. But I really love the setting of Jade City. Like, I loved how there was this blend of Eastern cultures. It really reminded me of Singapore and Singapore, Taiwan, and to some extent Japan.
I mean, I thought of Hong Kong right away.
Well. Yeah, gangster films and the triad.
Well,
and
it's really interesting that you were talking about how this was an aesthetic or setting that you've had in your mind for a long time, because, you know, these are all the things that I remember growing up with as well, gangster wushu films and the setting of pre-war Republic of China, Shanghai, with the gangsters wearing really nice suits and, you know, the territory wars. That's something that I've wanted to see. I was always wondering, how can we bring that setting to fiction? And your book totally does that and does it really well.
Yeah. I sometimes think Jade City is sort of a quintessentially Asian American book because it's such a blend in my mind of influences that are both Western and Eastern. And, you know, I haven't lived in Asia. And so in a sense, a lot of these, wuxia films and kung fu movies and so on that I watched when I was a kid and throughout my life were a form of fantasy. And they combined with all the Western media that I consumed and the fantasy traditions from the West, as well as roaring 20s, gangster films and all of that to create this blend. So it very much was this this mashup, if you will. But one of the things that I really enjoyed doing with it was creating a place that obviously takes cultural cues and historical cues, but is its own thing. And I think that was a really enjoyable challenge. And I think I succeeded because of exactly what you were both saying earlier, where it reminds you in some ways of Hong Kong and Singapore and Japan and Taiwan, but it's not any of those places. Yeah. And it's its own thing with its own culture. And I think that can be challenging because especially when you're writing fantasy, there's a lot of fantasy that's like obviously thinly veiled whatever, right? Like Game of Thrones, obviously England during the War of the Roses, right? Even if you look at like the map, you can tell where the inspiration is taken from. And so it was a fun challenge for me to create this world that was this blend of influences, but felt like it stood on its own.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how, like, it must have been tough. Like, you literally came up with your own
culture and culture, like, naming like convention. Social hierarchy. Like, it's so much to actually go through and research all of that and taking your research and like mixing it together to like, I don't know, this book really seemed like a remix of a lot of like Asian cultures and also I guess like gang lore, because it's like you have the triads and then you have like it really reminded me of like the Godfather, like that family aspect. But I don't think Asian gangs really have that kind of family aspect. I mean, certainly Yakuza. certainly the Yakuza doesn't. So,
it's very much a blend, and it takes inspiration from exactly what you said, the Yakuza and triads and the Italian American mafia. And, you know, I researched like organized crime groups around the world, and took the things that I liked, right? I took that familial aspect from the mafia, and I took the sort of the hierarchy and also kind of like the body mod a status from the Yakuza, and the Yakuza also are much more legitimate, right? Like they're much more visible, publicly. I mean, they have like offices and business cards and stuff like that. that came into it. And then like the triads, you know, there's the flowery, titles and, you know, the connection to martial arts. And so all of those things came together, but I had to kind of make it its own thing. And part of the reason why I did so is because, well, I'm a world building junkie. I've written 3 books in the last 3 years, and all of them have been in like different worlds. So I sometimes wonder why I do this to myself. It seems like an awful lot of work. But I just love the process of world building. So Jade City was a ton of fun for me to create. And then once I created it, to kind of inhabit that world and populate it with characters.
Yeah. So what led to the decision to make it a more urban fantasy than, say,
I did want to mention that because a lot of fantasies are set in like medieval era or like
Europe
or like super like sci-fi, like in the future. But then this is like set in not even like present day, really. It's like set when like automobiles are still being made, like TVs new, and like I don't really see that in fantasy, so it really fascinated me.
One of the things I really wanted to accomplish with Jade City was a particular aesthetic, right, that just wouldn't have worked in a medieval time frame. So when you think gangster stories, you often think fancy cars and men in suits and guns. And so it really made sense for me to set Jade City in a modern era. And the other thing that I wanted to do was create kind of an analogy with our own world in terms of a society in transition and the challenges of modernization in this place that has this long history and tradition. So one of the things that I was thinking about is, you know, a lot of the gangster stories that we're familiar with take place in periods like the Roaring Twenties and, you know, the 1950s. So periods in America in which there was this great deal of economic growth and social change that also spelled a lot of opportunity for organized crime, for example. And I put Jade City sort of analogous to the post-World War II period in Asia, where you've got these countries that are coming out of colonialism and war and going through this modern economic miracle of growth and prosperity, but that's also vying with all this old tradition that's present. So I had a really kind of deliberate reason for placing Jade City in a different time period than what you would think of as traditionally epic fantasy.
I also really loved how even with the modern tech, there was also actual magic involved. Like Jade actually gave users magic, and only specific users too. Like, it's a blood rite. And I thought that was really interesting and added like a new nuance to urban fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, the world of K-Con, the world of Jade City is very much it's a low magic world, in the sense that there's just this one element of magic in an otherwise very recognizable kind of modern milieu. And what I love to do with fantasy is take the element, and in science fiction as well, right? You've got kind of your cool factor, your magic or tech element, and then play with, you know, what does that do in terms of all the ripple effects through society? So I like this idea of having the magic be a resource that actually drives the economy and isn't, you know, some sort of necessarily like mystical, unknowable thing that's practiced by wizards or whatever. But it's this thing that's controlled by a country, and other countries want in on it, and other people want in on it. So that creates all sorts of great larger scope questions that can fold into the more personal stories.
Like, going back to what you were talking about, how in this book you're able to really expand on the number of perspectives. Like, there are like four main characters in your story that you bounce between perspectives on. Did you have a favorite person to write about, or?
Yeah, it was really fun for me, actually, to have this cast of characters, because there were so many ways to build characterization by using a different character's point of view. So you might get, you know, Hilo, for example, a chapter from his point of view, but then you go to Shay and you see him from her point of view, and it's you get a different angle. It's kind of like all these different ways to triangulate on the characters. And what I really wanted to do, and, you know, the thing that I love about The Godfather and about The Sopranos was, yeah, they're about these characters that are pretty ruthless, but at the core, there's this story about a family. And that was something that I very much had in my vision for this book, was that it would be a story about this family. And that, to me, necessitated these really nuanced family dynamics, and, you know, the whole history that they have with each other and the roles that they play in that family were really important to me. And in terms of, did I have a favorite? You know, they were all challenging and rewarding in their own way. And I tried very hard to not have a favorite. So whenever I felt like, oh, one of them was maybe getting a little more favoritism, I saw that as a sign to make sure I built up the others to the same extent. And it's been really fun to see the reaction since the book has come out, because people have such widely differing opinions as to who their favorite is. So there'll be readers who really like one character over the others. And it's interesting to see that, because I've come to the point where, you know, they're all like my children in a sense, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses. Maybe at some point I will say who my favorite is, but I don't want to, because then readers might think they're safe, and that would be wrong.
I really appreciated your female characters in the book, because for me, it was like when I heard that this was about like gangsters in kind of like a post-war fantasy world, I thought, oh, is it gonna be like The Godfather, where it's mostly just male characters, but somehow like you were able to give female characters an equal, I guess like an equal opportunity to shine. And like, I guess my question is like, was that intentional? Like, did you put in the extra effort to make your female characters stand out just as much as your male characters?
Yes, in the sense that I definitely, from the beginning, saw some strong female characters in the story. And I think that, you know, the thing with stories about gangsters is that, generally speaking, they are very male-dominated, and the female characters are generally victims or sidelined. So, you know, you think about The Godfather, there's the, you know, you've got the characters who basically are very passive. They're sort of the typical mob wife, right? And you kind of have to go into more modern era, like, into The Sopranos to find like someone who breaks the mold, if you will. But the reality is that there are women in these mafia type organizations, right? I actually was, when I was doing research for the book, I came across these articles about how like a lot of the leaders of the mafia in like Sicily now are female, because a lot of the men have been caught and put in jail. And so they're like working through their wives in a sense. And so there's these women who are coming up through the ranks who have large roles. And actually there was like a female Yakuza leader that was the leader of one of the huge Yakuza organizations for a spell after her husband died. So it's not like there are no women, even in this really testosterone-driven world. But it's also unrealistic to paint a world in which they have equal opportunity and there's just as many of them as the men and they don't have any, you know, discrimination against them. That's also unrealistic. So for me, when I write fantasy, I'm really stringent about trying to make my fantasy worlds feel as real as possible. And to me, having these powerful women also struggle with the fact that they are living in this patriarchal society that has this really macho kind of warrior ethos culture was a source of a lot of good conflict and interest. So I would say yes, definitely. And you will see more of them in the future books as well.
Yay.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really liked about when you're building the world of KCON. It's within, you know, the criminal underworld, the Green Bull Society. Like, it seemed like talent with Jade, the magical power, was equally acceptable in both male and female. Like, you had a lot of women kicking ass in the throughout your story, and that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I wanted to do with you're talking about kind of the underworld is I wanted to kind of create this world where the Green Bones weren't even though they came from like a prior rebellion organization against these foreign occupiers, they've since kind of become like the legitimate shadow government. So even though the book gets kind of shelved in, not shelved, but sort of categorized as a crime thriller of sorts, it's also very different in that there's not kind of your typical battle versus the police or against, you know, the FBI or what have you. It's very much of like a like society in which it is it's ingrained. A lot of this Jade and the traditions and the warrior cultures have this long history. And I liked that idea and kind of creating society out of that. Because I think a lot of Western gangster stories are based on this idea of, you know, the Italian American mafia and them being criminal organizations. But if you look at like the history of the triads, for example, they didn't start off as what they are now. They started off as these patriotic secret societies that were dedicated to overthrowing foreign rule during the Qing Dynasty. So there was all this tradition involved with the like nationalistic elements of the triad that you that we don't have in our Western conception of organized crime.
Yeah, and especially throughout your book, there's an ongoing tension about like, do we protect what we have? Do we expand? Do we like this like the tension between becoming a global nation and becoming a strong national nation, right? Like that.
That is such like an Asian story to me, because like if you just look at Asian history, like that is something that every single Asian country had to like deal with. Do we open our borders? Do we become a global nation? So that's definitely something that I thought of when I was reading the book.
Yeah.
I also like really thought that the prejudice that were ingrained in Janlun society was really interesting, because like you have like different ethnicities in the island, and like some are privileged and some aren't, and there's also like prejudice against people who can't use jade, and like it's so like layered and detailed, and I really appreciated that.
Right. And I think one of the things, you know, that we don't have in North America is like, well, thousands and thousands of years of history, right? So that's something that like, I mean, all things considered, we're such a young country in comparison to so many, practically all of Asia, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I really strived to do was to create a fantasy world that felt like it had been around for a long time, but had been through a lot of change in recent years.
Yeah. During the lead up to the release of Jade City, you put out a post on Medium about how your views on fantasy, and how, you know, there's so much more we can do with the genre than just the tip. And Reaver and I were talking about the latest Tolkien, was it Amazon or Hulu deal? And how...
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
We're like, they're remaking Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like into like an Amazon series. And it's just like, why? Yeah. Why? We already have like a perfect trilogy already.
Oh, why? Yes. I had a fit of rage over that as well. Because, and this was a big part of my point in my Medium post, was that, medieval Europe was like roughly... like 20% of human history on the second smallest continent on Earth, right? So there's this vast store of human history and civilization that hasn't been exploited by fantasy writers. And to say nothing of the fact that, you know, there's not only is there a lot of history and culture out there, there's a lot of readers out there that are interested in periods of time in history beyond, you know, medieval Europe. So I think there's just a lot of potential for where fantasy can go and what else we can do with it. And what's exciting is that we are seeing a lot more of it. Like if I look at fantasy novels that have come out this year,
I
can count, many that are based in all sorts of different cultures and time periods, and mixes of different inspirations. I think in a way that we wouldn't have seen at all even 10 or 15 years ago. So there's a lot of great stuff that's happening in the fantasy genre, and I'm excited. I think there's still a lot of runway, and we're seeing more of it. And I think each year, it's just opening up, and there's in one sense, it's great that Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones have made fantasy so mainstream, because it has brought a lot more new readers into the genre. It's now cool to be a fantasy genre reader.
Yeah.
Just a super geek anymore. And that opens up the possibility of then looking beyond.
Yeah, like instead of another remake of The War of the Roses, why not Warring States China? Or I don't know, like
I'm actually like pretty excited that more Asian and Asian American authors are kind of reclaiming their heritage and writing writing Asian inspired fantasies, because for a while now, a lot of non-Asian authors were writing Asian inspired fantasies, and I'm sure some of them can write well and did their research, but at the same time, it's like I would like to see representation from own voices authors. So I'm actually really excited that more and more Asian authors are turning to their heritage to make these fantasies.
Yeah, definitely. I also think something that we as Asian American creators can do is blend and remix in a way that either, Asian authors in Asia or white authors in North America can't necessarily do as naturally, because of the experience of having multiple cultural influences. And that's where you get a lot of really cool stuff, is in the blend and remix. If you think about a director like Quentin Tarantino, he just takes so many different movie influences and mashes them together, right? And I think that ability to kind of do remixing and take influences from different sources can lead to some really cool fantasy work.
Yeah, that's how you end up with something like Jade City, which is, you can see the tropes from American crime fiction, but also the tropes from wuxia and from Asian historical fiction as well, right, as well as the magic part. I mean, I love that the magic in your story is what gives them the ability to do wushu stuff, fly through the air and stop bullets and shoot, chi blasts and stuff like that.
I also how it's actually from jade, which is kind of a big symbol in Chinese culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the premise for Jade City is kind of wish fulfillment, because I've been studying martial arts for quite a few years of my life. And, I'm also a big fan of kung fu films. So I would watch these films and be like, I've been training for a long time. I can't run up walls. What is the deal with that? Why can't I do chi blasts yet? And so it was one of these ways for me to reconcile the fact that I could train in martial arts and still never achieve what my favorite characters in kung fu films could achieve. And there must be a secret ingredient. There has to be something I'm not doing. And so hence Magic Jade. And I liked the fact that I could take those sorts of tropes of the magic martial arts powers and then almost give and put them in sort of a logical framework that makes sense. Logical
framework. Yeah.
I do have a question. It's a pretty silly one. We kept mentioning kung fu films, mafia films, and I just wanted to ask, if Jade City got adapted into a film, do you have a dream cast in mind?
Oh. So I think I actually did get asked this before by various people. And it's funny because one of the things my editor and I did when we were doing revisions on the book was start dream casting it. It was totally a fun thing we started doing. And most of the people that we were tossing around are too old for the roles now. We were a young Michelle Yeoh would have been really good as Shay. And they were we need someone with the gravitas of maybe a Tony Leung for Lawn. And then we were I did decide Louis Tan would be an excellent Hilo.
He would be a great Hilo. I think, yeah. You'd probably be pulling from that, the young cast of Marco Polo, all those right, they're all stunt, yeah, people, and they'd all be able to pull off Marco Polo or Into the Badlands, the current spate of stunt slash actors,
right?
Just mentally seeing a Pinterest board in my head with all these actors.
Make the Pinterest board, make it.
I'd love to see that though. I'd love to
gladly share that would be awesome.
So I guess what are you working on in 2018, I know you're working on the sequel to Jade City, and you're also working on sequels to your other books too, as well, right?
Yeah. So I have the sequel to my science fiction novel Exo comes out this year. It's called Crossfire, and it'll be out in June. So I'm excited about that. And then it's like just head down and working on the second book in the Green Bone Saga, and it'll be called Jade War, which we've already gotten sign off on that title.
Nice.
And the paperback for Jade City will also be out this year. So it'll be a combination of continuing to work on some of my young adult projects and then really focusing on getting this trilogy written.
Sounds like a lot of writing. A lot of writing. Well, I can't wait to read through Jade War in one night again. But
do you have any, I guess, like book recommendations for our listeners out there?
I do. So these are books that are coming out this year. I really enjoy. It's a short story that you may or may not have heard of. It's called the. I'm going to mess up the title. Pearl Rehabilitative Colony for Ungrateful Daughters, I believe it's called, but it's by Asian American author Henry Lien, and he is using the world of that short story in a middle grade novel that comes out this year called Pea Sprout Chen, and it is a humorous story that is basically like. About, it's like Mean Girls on ice, but with swords. And it's like this world that he's created where these characters do a combination of figure skating and wushu. And it's just, it's so.
This sounds like right up Rira's alley.
Oh my God.
Rira loves figure skating
and swords. Okay,
so you have to, yes, Pea Sprout Chen by Henry Lien. And I am currently reading an advanced copy of R.F. Kuang's The Poppy War, which comes out this summer. And it is R.F. Kuang, Rebecca Kuang, is a student at Georgetown University, I believe, who has studied Chinese history in great depth. And this book that she's written is a fantasy novel that is based on the Sino-Japanese war. And it is, I'm not quite done with it yet, but it is epic and it is brutal. Wow. So those are two novels that I definitely recommend keeping an eye out for this year.
Yeah. That second one sounds like right up my alley.
So excited.
And I guess that'll do it for our interview. Thank you so much for talking with us about your book and your writing. And yeah, everyone should check out Jade City. It is Marvin approved. I read it in a night and I don't regret it.
And check out Fonda's other books, Exo and Zero Boxer.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was our interview with author Fonda Lee. Check out her newest book, Jade City, and bookstores everywhere. And that'll also do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again for listening and helping us support books by Asian and Asian American authors. Don't forget, the January Book Club pick is Pachinko by Minjin Lee, so hopefully you guys are working your way through it. And don't forget, you can interact with the other members of the Books and Boba Book Club by going to our Goodreads group and posting. We always love to hear from our fellow group members. And anything you post can appear on this podcast. So
yeah, like literally anything. It doesn't even have to be related to the book.
I guess some last-minute housekeeping. Don't forget to subscribe to us if you like the show. Give us a rating review on iTunes. And yeah, let your, like, if you have friends who are looking to get into reading, especially for their New Year resolutions.
This is a great way to keep track of your books.
Yeah, please share our podcast with them and get them into the book club.
Yeah, it's a very like small niche that we're in. So any type of sharing or word of mouth, we really appreciate it.
Definitely helps a lot. But on that note, thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.
Keep reading.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited by Marvin Yue. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of podcasts featuring unique voices from the Asian American community. If you like Books and Boba, you might also like Saturday School, a pop culture history podcast hosted by journalist Ada Sang and film scholar Brian Hu, who highlight and discuss classic Asian American films. You can catch Saturday School and the other great programs of the Potluck Collective by going to the website www.podcastpotluck.com.